It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. So, the Democrats are talking about getting rid of the filibuster. I don't need to tell you much about that. The whole filibuster argument has been going on for years and years and years. But people are particularly talking about it in the news shows right now. Yes, obviously this will be inconvenient to Republicans, but not the usual inconvenience that we've been hearing about back and forth for years, depending on who's in power. In this case, by extension, this will be inconvenient to anyone in the country who cares about freedom, not because of the filibuster rule itself. As it happens, the filibuster is not in the Constitution anyway. It's a law the Senate enacted many years ago, and it's been around so long it seems like part of the Constitution, but it's not in the Constitution. And frankly, in the interest of balance and objectivity, I never cared much for the filibuster rule myself. It always seemed to me that whatever party held the majority should be able to get their way, in as much as they were the ones voted into office. That's how a republic works. Of course, that doesn't mean I'm unmindful of the hypocrisy. The GOP has threatened to get rid of the filibuster when they were in power, only to hear the likes of Charles Schumer and Joe Biden whine about that being incredibly unfair to the minority party, which still has a right to be heard. This is always the Democrat playbook. When they lose the majority in the House and the Senate, the American people still want bipartisanship. But when they win elections, the American people have spoken. And how about when they steal elections? When they steal elections, they also say the American people have spoken. But if the American people dare speak in other ways, such as pointing out election fraud, that's a problem. More correctly put, that's a problem when they're speaking against Democrat fraud. The Dems themselves speak against election fraud all the time. The entire 4 years Trump was in office, they claimed he stole the election. Got that? Spouting election fraud for 4 years is not being a traitor. Holding a rally 2 months after an election, that is being a traitor. But understand this. They plan to steal elections from now on. That's what's really happening here. Only instead of thousands of new ballots being shipped into polls in the middle of the night after a group of states all stopped counting at the same time by an incredible coincidence, this time they want to codify the strategy and make it into law. That, my friends, is where the filibuster comes in, which means that whatever we may or may not think about the filibuster philosophically, in this particular case, we'd better hope and pray that the filibuster stays in place. Again, on paper, I don't care for the filibuster. I openly admit this. What concerns me at the moment is the Democrats' stated reason for getting rid of the filibuster, their motive. They're not too shy about it. Because once they've done that, once they've gotten rid of this thing, once they can make policy with simple majority, they plan many unconstitutional crusades, only one of which is the federalization of election law. Now, while that can be stopped by the Supreme Court because that is a violation against something that really is in our Constitution, packing the court with more than 9 justices is also on their agenda should they get rid of the filibuster. Just putting in an unlimited supply of hack politicians who will rule with the Democrats every time, although with so-called constitutional justices like Roberts, who needs a packed court? Another subject for another time. My friends, up to now, whenever one party considered the filibuster, there were always some within that same party who prevented it. This will come back to bite us in the butt, they always say. If we employ this nuclear option and then lose control of Congress later, our opponents will now have the very advantage we voted for ourselves, a free pass without a filibuster to stop them. That's not the way the Democrats are thinking this time. Not most of them. There are a couple, but not most of them. Why? Because all they have to do is get rid of the filibuster once, then change election laws, and then they will never have to worry about losing Congress again. The filibuster will no longer matter one way or the other. Here's what's going on. January 6, 2021 is being exploited. It's the latest Trojan horse. Getting rid of the filibuster is the gate the Trojan horse will go through. The Democrats see that their nightmarish policies are being rejected by most Americans, not merely Republicans, but Democrat voters, independents, those who are classically liberal but not leftist Marxists. Joe Biden has a 33% approval rating right now. Although why even 33% of the people want to follow this buffoon is a mystery to me. But that's not very good. 33%. The Dems know they will lose the midterm election of 2022 if things continue as they are. They know they will get the shellacking of a lifetime. It will be a red wave high enough to make a tsunami blush if, and it's a big if we actually have a fair election. So they need to make sure it isn't fair. How? By changing election laws and federalizing the election before November, preventing states like Texas from demanding voter ID, forcing all states to extend the days of elections and to mail out ballots, even to those who don't request them, practices ripe with fraud as proven in the 2020 presidential election, and the debacle where Californians were prevented from recalling King Newsom, his royal majesty. Ballots are now the law of the land in California. It's no longer a temporary executive order with a feeble excuse about COVID and safety. As California goes, so goes the entire nation. If Democrats get their way, a filibuster could get in the way of that. So could a lot of heartfelt, openly expressed opinion from American constituents who may just vote to recall their local Democratic representative or senator. And so, in order to survive this impending disaster, the Dems need to get our minds off of defunded police, open borders, revolving door arrests, and violent criminals set back out on the streets without bail, Keystone pipelines being shut down, and Joe Biden kissing the behinds of the Saudis, begging them for oil. Men winning women's track meets and swim meets because they call themselves women, grade school kids being separated into people of color or people of white privilege in order to enact blatantly racist agendas which disguise themselves as teachings against racism, and while children are separated in the classroom, they're using the same bathrooms and locker rooms. Should a boy decide he's a girl, or a girl decide she's a boy? Parents who complain are being characterized by our Justice Department as terrorists, while real terrorists, such as the Taliban, had Afghanistan handed back to them before Americans could get out and after the U.S. military had been withdrawn. Shall I go on? Not the best resume in the world with a midterm election in the wings. So how do they get our minds off of it? How do they create a new narrative? By portraying themselves as the champions of democracy, those who speak against insurrections like January 6. They're talking about January 6 now as a national holiday, a time of reflection on one of the greatest assaults on freedom our country has ever known, right up there with 9/11, right up there with the attack on Pearl Harbor. Nancy Pelosi says January 6 was an attack on democracy. She is one of but many spouting this historical revision. Look, I don't approve of the Capitol break-in that happened last year. I said so right away on the air. You can go listen to a back show anytime. But very few who participated in the rally itself breached the Capitol, yet they're all being painted with one broad brush. And this was a rally being held that day out of a concern for democracy. People felt the election, the presidential election, had been stolen. Maybe you don't agree. Fine, I respect that, but the fraud cannot be denied. You may debate whether or not it was enough fraud to turn the election over, but even if you wanted to ignore Dominion machines, and even if you wanted to ignore the 1,000-plus sworn affidavits of people at polls and post offices witnessing manufactured ballots and illegal activity, just look at what was done out in the open. Look how many states before the election illegally changed their own election rules in the name of COVID and safety, violating their own state constitutions and or the federal constitution. If you look at that, then at the very least, you must concede that people had reason to question, reason to demand an investigation. That's why the rally was being held. And it was being held peacefully. The amount of people there, hard to know for sure, but the Washington Post, no conservative rag in any way, shape, or form, puts the figure at 85,000 protesters. That's probably small, but we'll go with that. 85,000 protesters, about 1,000 of them were the number breaching the Capitol. ABC News. Some estimate a much smaller number than that, but even if we use the 1,000 figure, that means about 98% did not breach the Capitol. And these are the same people who, when we look at the riots that were going on all across the country in 2020, were saying, well, ignore the burning buildings. Most of the people out there were having a peaceful protest. That was not the case in many of the riots. But if even one person was protesting peacefully, they didn't want everybody protesting to be painted with one brush. And yet here we have at the Capitol, a high majority being peaceful, but they don't mind calling all of them insurrectionists. Now, let me quote someone who is conservative, but not much of a Trump supporter. Nevertheless, he calls things as he sees them. He's somebody I respect. I'm quoting Ben Shapiro. The event resulted in one direct death. Rioter Ashley Babbitt was shot by a Capitol Police officer and some $1.5 million in property damage to the Capitol building. The Capitol was cleared within hours of the riot, and Pence and then Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell promptly presided over the certification of the 2020 election. Those who broke into the Capitol or even trespassed have ended up in jail. Meanwhile, by contrast, the Black Lives Matter riots of 2020 resulted in some $2 billion in insured property damage and likely billions more in uninsured property damage. 24 people died, and the resultant political movement against the police led to an unprecedented nationwide spike in homicides in major cities. To date, there have been no commemorations from CNN, speeches from Biden or Harris, or a day honoring the police officers who held rioters in check. Those were the words of Ben Shapiro, again, not a huge Trump supporter. My friends, let's review. Let's add this up. This was a very small fraction actually breaking into the Capitol building. That happens with crowds. Crowds get out of control. Of course, Donald Trump, then President Donald Trump, requested that the National Guard be called out ahead of time, and the police department, under the direction of Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, I would say that showed concern from a man who did not want a few bad actors to ruin an otherwise peaceful rally. This was a rally on behalf of fair elections. This was a rally on behalf of democracy. This was a rally protesting stolen democracy. But Pelosi says that since the Capitol was attacked, it was an attack on democracy. Oh, really? Really, Miss Pelosi? That's your concern? Okay, let's take you at your word. But if a small percentage of protesters getting out of hand and breaching a building is an example of attacking democracy, then I just have to ask, where were you when the White House was attacked by Black Lives Matter protesters getting out of hand? Where were you when the federal building was attacked in Portland? That may have been in Portland, but it was still a federal building. Was that an attack on democracy? Other questions in general. If this was an insurrection, how come so far those who broke in have only been charged with trespassing? And why are trespassers locked up for a year while people charged with murder are being released without bail in major cities? Why is President Trump accused of instigating the violence when he himself wanted the National Guard there and he himself at the rally said, and I quote, "I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard." More questions. Ted Cruz, at a Senate hearing interrogated Jill Sanborn, executive assistant director of the National Security Branch. Here is just a sample of what Ted Cruz asked her. He said, how many FBI agents and confidential informants participated in the events of January 6th? Did the FBI incite violence? Did the FBI actually commit violence? She said she was not free to answer these questions. Well, why not, if the answer was no? How about the Capitol Police opening pathways for people to enter the building? What was going on? And was that an FBI plant caught on video saying to the crowd, we need to break in? I don't know, but the crowd thought so. That says something about the integrity of the crowd. They started shouting, Fed, Fed, Fed. They didn't want to follow that lead. What about the footage of Trump supporters openly resisting those who were calling for violence? We have only private footage of that. Official videos will not be released by Pelosi. Neither will she answer any questions about why she didn't have the Capitol Police ready ahead of time. Why should she answer? Her party is in charge of the Justice Department, who's going to make her answer. Just questions, ladies and gentlemen. Questions for whatever amount of time we remain a republic. Don't stop asking questions, especially the kinds of questions whose answers make the obvious obvious.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. It's always great to have our recurring guest, Ruth Wise of Election Integrity Project. I'm so glad she's one of the ones on the fence watching all of this. Ruth, welcome back to our program.
Thank you, Bob. Always a pleasure.
Well, the last two times I had you on were on the heels of this recall when King Newsom, by a fair election, did not get recalled. I don't believe it really happened that way. At the very least, I have a lot of trouble believing that it wasn't much closer than they made it out to be. Certainly there was fraud. Is there any news on that? I know you have a lot of things you want to talk about. First, an update on that. Has any more been uncovered? Or is it one of those things where you're just not allowed to look? What's going on with that?
Yes, that's a very difficult question because really no one's looking. And those of us who want to look are being prevented from doing that looking. So all you have is conjecture. You have looking at what the scenario and the logical outcome you assumed you would see versus what did happen. And as you say, there's a cognitive dissonance there as to the enormity of the votes. He may not have been recalled, but I have a hard time believing that the vote was accurate. And yet there's no way to look into that. I think the biggest consequence, though, that I'm concerned about is that elections like that cause a lot of voters to just throw up their hands and say, why should I bother to vote? It's the fix is in before I ever vote. And we do not want people exiting the democratic process. We want people being more engaged. We want people to vote with their hearts and with all the energy they can. And we don't want them being discouraged by the kinds of things that have been happening recently that are tending to turn a lot of people off.
Yeah, and I can understand that because I feel discouraged and I've asked myself, what's the point? I'm not the kind of person that would stay home. I will always go and vote whether I think it's going to do any good or not. But I'm just saying I can relate with somebody feeling that way. So what could you say by way of encouragement? What kind of hope might there be on the horizon for future elections, even in the People's Republic of California?
Well, from the perspective of Election Integrity Project California, we do have a lawsuit that's active and now before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And if that lawsuit is successful, which we really have a great deal of belief that it will be ultimately, that will really bring California back out of the rafters. It will take 20 some odd election laws that have been perpetrated by the legislature over the last two decades and declare them unconstitutional so that all these things that open the doors to manipulation and fraud in the state of California will suddenly have to disappear.
So we'll realize we've had a bunch of unelected officials for the last bunch of years.
Well, I guess you could look at it.
Unfortunately, we won't be able to recall them, but if we could at least learn from that and fix the future.
We look to the future. Everything we do, and definitely our lawsuit is all focused on the future. It does not seek to overturn any election or say that other elections were fraudulent, but simply saying we want to close the door to potential manipulation that is so enormous in the state of California and bring some faith back to the voters of California.
Now, you mentioned the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. There was a time when anybody in California that cared about integrity wasn't too heartened to hear that the Ninth Circuit was looking at things. That has changed since President Trump, though, hasn't it? How many justices do we have there now that might tilt the vote in our favor?
I really don't know the balance there, but I do know that we feel that there's a much better chance of getting a fair shake there. We also know that if for some unforeseen reason that we don't get the Ninth Circuit to go in our direction, that we still then have the springboard to go to the Supreme Court after that.
Okay, so that is what it is, this last election. I know we were hearing all kinds of stories, though, of people going down to the polls and being told that they had already voted. Did more stories like that come in the time since you've been on this show? Or are you still getting those kinds of reports from people?
Yes, we are. We have well over 3,500 incident reports that came in with respect to just that one election from our observers, from our citizens, and from even people who live outside the borders of the state of California who were being urged to vote and send in their mail ballot when they have not been residents of California for 20 some odd years. So we have a lot more evidence to add to that lawsuit based on the 2021 recall election, and things did not go well for the election system there.
So the mail-in balloting was first enacted by executive order with COVID as an excuse. We can stand in line at a grocery store, but we can't stand in line at a poll. But now Sacramento has voted that into an actual law, and they didn't even need to mention COVID anymore. What are all the ramifications and perimeters of this new law? Tell our people, what is now the voting law in the state of California, actual codified law? Because what they're doing is exactly what the Democrats are going to be trying to do nationally. So we should know what's going on here, and the rest of the country should know what's going to go on everywhere else if we're not careful.
Well, the real important thing to realize, and everybody knows it, is that across the nation, and certainly in the state of California, the voter rolls are in great disarray. And when you enact this law that says we're just going to save the voters the trouble, and we are going to mail a ballot without request to every single registered voter in the state, you know that there are, upwards of a million votes going out there to addresses that no longer have that recipient to receive it. That person has either moved out of the state or out of the county or has since become deceased. And so there's no way to keep up with that. And there's no effort, especially in the state of California, to clean the voter rolls in most of the counties. And so as a result, you are mailing out multitudes of ballots more than you have legitimate voters. When you add that to laws and regulations perpetrated by the Secretary of State in terms of how to process those ballots and which ones to accept and which ones to reject, they have now made it virtually impossible to reject a ballot on the basis of anything, on the basis of missing signature, on the basis of a signature that clearly does not.
I mean, this law says that a signature doesn't even have to be checked anymore?
No, we have not gone that far. But the laws in place make it almost impossible to reject anything. And so as a result, most ballots that might be turned in illegitimately by someone who is unscrupulous and gets their hand on one or multiple
ballots. They'll put it in some basket where they say they're going to look at it or consider it still or something.
Precisely.
Like that.
And usually
it depends on whose hands it gets.
Usually the first pass with someone who just has the computer and has the signatures will look at it briefly and just say, okay, I'm going to accept it. And very few get challenged. And even the ones that do get challenged and go to the second level, then, you know, the state has made it almost impossible to ultimately say, no, I'm sorry, this isn't a legitimate voter. And so we know that multitudes, and there's no way to quantify this because we can't get in and count them, but there are multitudes of ballots that are being accepted that should not be accepted. And as a result, those of us who are legitimate voters are having our vote watered down or canceled out by ballots that should never have come in. And that doesn't even address the number of people who are being enabled to vote as non-citizens without ever being caught. And that of course, is another attack. If you want to talk about attacks on democracy, and if you want to talk about foreign influence, that's really the biggest foreign influence across the nation, and certainly in California, is the number of people who are not legitimate citizens and who are being enabled to vote in the state.
Yeah, it is interesting how for 4 years we were told that Donald Trump was in cahoots with the Russians and that the Russians interfered. And yet these are the same people that don't want to ask for voter ID. And now they've gone ahead and in New York City, they're openly admitting and they've passed a little city ordinance there that you don't have to be a legal citizen to vote in a New York City.
Right. Election. And that we do have that right as a state. And we know that San Francisco has enabled non-citizens to vote in the school board elections there. But you cannot allow non-citizens constitutionally to vote in a federal election.
I would think that would be in some of these state constitutions too.
It's in every state constitution that you have to be 18 and a citizen in order to vote.
So the states
a municipality has the right to give municipal voting rights to people that are there.
So the excuse was COVID when they did the executive order. This latest law that passed, what are they claiming is the reason? We know the real reason. They want to cheat. But what are they claiming is the real reason?
Well, that's a terrific question.
Are they claiming race or
no?
What is their reasoning?
The reasoning is, gosh, it worked really well because we had the largest voter turnout in history. So obviously, this is the way to go.
Of course, they had a large voter turnout. Half the ballots weren't real voters. That's about as large a turnout as you're going to get.
And not only that, you cannot compare one election to the other because voter involvement depends on what the election is about, who the candidates are, what the energy is. And you couldn't have found an election with a higher energy than the one that we just had, the national election. So if the voter turnout was going to be big anyway, you can't compare that to another election and say, see, it was bigger, so it must have been because we mailed ballots to everybody. It was ridiculous.
And it's interesting how our president-select of the United States, Biden, is coming out talking about what a fair election that was in 2020, how seamless and perfect it was. And then with the other side of his mouth, there's major problems with our elections, and that's why we need to get rid of the filibuster, and that's why we need to fix them. He's actually saying two different opposite things at the same time in the same breath, and he's just hoping people will be too stupid to notice the contradiction.
And that isn't a new thing. That's been what the progressive process is, and that contradiction never seems to
rise jamming,
to the surface. It's called
jamming. It doesn't have to have anything to do with truth. You just repeat it often enough, and then it'll echo in people's minds.
Right.
And it works. So this lawsuit that's going up to the Ninth Circuit, this was about the last election specifically, or is it broader than that?
No, it's about the election laws in the state of California. Okay. And
so
how
it was inspired by
the
last election, but it's not about the last election specifically.
No, we've been in operation since 2012. It's been inspired by all of the documentation we have collected since 2012. So it wasn't just inspired by a single election, but by a buildup of what we're seeing the wrong direction.
And is that the only pending lawsuit, or was there another one regarding the election we just had with Newsom?
There is not one regarding the 2021 election, but the evidence from that election will
be
tied into the lawsuit.
It will tie in together.
We do have another lawsuit active in the state of, in the county of Ventura for obstruction of observer rights, and it was severe. And so that one has been going on
for over
2 years.
Was this the last? Oh, this is from an election from a couple of years ago. What was that, presidential? Or?
It was, well, I think it started in 2018. Oh, and so we've just added to it in 2020 and 2021. But because of the COVID suspension of some of the court proceedings, that lawsuit has been, you know, pushed off.
Boy,
and dates have been pushed off.
To the left, COVID is just the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
They just love everything about COVID and all its different variants. Okay, well, the lawsuits are one thing, but I know there's a lot of other stuff going on with Election Integrity Project, not just in the state of California, but you're very concerned specifically about what's going on in San Diego. So let me just turn, I wanted to get my curiosities out of the way. I want to just turn it over to you to just proactively talk about a lot of other things that are on your radar right now.
Okay. One of the big campaigns we have going right now, and it's nothing new, we've been saying this since 2012, but we're really kind of ramping it up right now, because one of the things that voters in California can do that will bring back most integrity while the laws are still in place the way they are is to decide, I'm going to vote in person. I am not going to be waylaid by this effort to make voting something that I just phone in, basically. Because too many voters have been lured into believing that, hey, you know, it's okay, I just mark this thing and I throw it in the mail. And they're not thinking about what happens to those kinds of votes and how easily they are waylaid or manipulated or altered. And so if you vote in that fashion with a ballot in an envelope, regardless of how you turn it in, you don't have the assurance that that ballot gets counted or counted the way in which you cast it. So we are trying to get that information out to educate people. It's hard to do because both parties and all elections officials are all in for voting in by mail. They're all in for that. And we're under attack for daring to say something different.
Okay, but now, like we talked about in the last election, here in California, people were going down to vote in person and they were being told that they'd already voted by mail. So what recourse do they have at that point?
There were pockets where that did happen. It wasn't an enormous number of people and it was overblown, but it did happen. And usually it's an error on the part of the person at the polls and the ignorance of the voter not to know what to do when they're told that. Because if the voter knew to pursue it and not just walk away and say, oh, well, or
yeah,
just...
what do they do? Tell them to click their heels together three times like Dorothy and Oz? Is that the advice they give them?
No, the words that they need to say is, please call your hotline. We need to pursue it at that level.
At that, right now with me watching?
Right now, this minute, while I'm standing here trying to vote,
don't send me away
hotline
and tell me you're going to look into
Precisely.
It. Deal with it right now.
And every voter has that right to say, there's a problem here, call your hotline.
I want this resolved because I know who I am and I know I didn't vote.
Yes, because it was usually an error on the part of the poll worker who was not conversant with the new technology and the new electronic poll books, and they were finding information that was not accurate. Whereas if they had pursued it with a hotline and gotten walked through it by experts at that level, that voter's problem probably would have gone away.
And I know some people are not confrontational. They're not fighters. They don't feel they have the fortitude. But ladies and gentlemen, you're just going to have to learn to do this or you can kiss our republic goodbye.
Well, we want people to be polite and understanding because most of the poll workers are just like you and me. We're citizens that want to do our civic duty and we're doing the best we can. So you want to be assertive but polite. Just say, hey, could you walk it through with your hotline and be very polite about it, but don't just walk away.
Yeah. So be confrontational, but not in a negative confrontational. Assertive, but not in your face, not belligerent.
Exactly. Not blaming and not assuming the person is out to get them, but just simply say, I think there may be an error here. Would you please pursue this with your hotline? That would have solved a lot of those problems. But we are really encouraging people, go in to vote in person. And Many of the counties now have polls open for multiple days, which we were going to talk about tonight with San Diego. We are now going to have voting going on for 11 days in a row. 11 days, those vote centers will be open for the first.
Boy, that's an extra 10 days where we can have fraud.
But
that's
the,
just great.
But the first 9 of those days, they're going to be hearing crickets there. And so if you want to go in and vote trouble-free without having to stand in line behind anybody, go during the first 9 days and submit your ballot in person, not in an envelope. You need to vote in person. And then, of course, the first thing that comes back to me, Bob, when I say that is, yeah, but the machines. I have to vote on a machine. I have to cast my ballot
on
a ballot marking
device. Well, that can be another problem,
device.
But let's at least lessen the problem as much as possible.
Exactly, exactly. And you, and people, again, are very skeptical, but we need to reassure them that even though these machines may, and we're going to find that out in our audit, and of course, the other audits going on all over the nation are finding the same thing out, they may be susceptible to be programmed or manipulated. It doesn't mean that they all are. It doesn't mean that most of them are. So please don't assume that these machines are all, you know, evil and every election official out there is a bad guy.
Okay, well, as a Christian pastor, I want to volunteer my services to cast demons out of any Dominion machines that people bring my way.
Okay. I love it.
Well, here's something to think about, Ruth. We'll talk more about this when we come back from the break. Have you heard anything in the wind? I'm wondering if this mail-in ballot, offering the mail-in to people, is just the first step. Are we going to start hearing something like, unless you've been vaccinated, you're not allowed to go to the polls in person? I'll let you think about that. My guest is Ruth Wise of Election Integrity Project. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Listen to this customer review of Bob Siegel's novel, Choice of the Lorelei. I saw this play on which the story is based many years ago. Elements of it have stayed with me over the years as it expanded my imagination about how things might have been in ancient times. It was also very exciting to see this story intersecting with the other works by the author. Very different stories, yet linked by a common element. I can hardly wait for more. Choice of the Lorelei, available in ebook or print copies from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. My guest, and it's always a pleasure to have her, Ruth Wise of California Election Integrity Project. Ruth, right before we went to the break, I hit you with the zinger question, but it's one of those making the obvious, obvious questions. I'm sure everybody's wondering, will the same liberals who are claiming we should not have to have ID to go and vote claim that we need an ID vaccination passport to vote in person, knowing that many will not do it and thus even force people to do mail-in balloting who would have wanted to go down and vote in person? Are you hearing anything in the winds like that?
Actually, I do not anticipate that at all. And the reason I say that is many of the polling locations in 2020 and 21 required masks. The requirements are the venue requirements. They're not the registrar's requirements, but they have to go with the whatever the venue says. And they were not allowed legally to turn away any voter who chose to not wear a mask. Instead, they had to accommodate them. And as a result, they have polling booths and that sort of thing outside so that people could vote without meeting those requirements.
You don't think they'll try to pass some law to change that that they could turn them away?
I do not. I really don't think they will go that far.
That's good news, Ruth. That's a whole lot more hope than I've had. But hey, you're more in the thick of it than I am. You're in the middle. You would know. So I'm very glad to hear that.
They're too busy fighting voter suppression that isn't even there to do anything that would suppress the vote from their end. So no.
Yeah, it just seems that COVID and the vaccine is the exception to all rules with them. Well, we'll see.
And you could be right.
We'll see. Well, it wouldn't surprise me, but at the moment, that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So that is good news. Okay, other things going on with Election Integrity Project that you want our listeners to know?
Yes, we are encouraging, as I said before, people to vote in person. This is something we want you to get together with every organization, every group, every Sunday school class, everything you're in, and talk it up and say, look, this is how we can protect our vote the best right now until we iron out the rest of the problems, is saying, I'm going to vote in person. I am not going to fall for turning my vote in an envelope. And the good news in San Diego is that even though we've accepted the Voters' Choice Act and are now going to 11 days of voting and all this complicated stuff, we also have been able to work out with the registrar a very exciting thing, and that is everybody's talking about, I want a paper ballot. I want a paper ballot. I don't want to vote on a machine. And we don't have to vote on a machine now in San Diego. We did in the last election. If we voted in person, we had to vote using the ballot marking device. And people didn't trust that, and I'm concerned about it because of the QR code. But now you don't have to, because we are being given the opportunity to take that perfectly legal paper ballot that we are mailed in the mail and take it in and mark it without the envelope and put it in the box like a live same day in-person ballot, which will be counted without manipulation that same day. And so there's your paper ballot right in your hands. You don't have to put it in an envelope.
You know, that's wonderful. Given our Board of Supervisors and given our mayor, and I'm not sure where the election paradigm falls to that authority structure, how did that get through?
The Registrar of Voters. We have a very...
You could bypass the mayor and the...
Yes,
and the,
okay, yes. We have a very cooperative Registrar of Voters. They have been listening to us and the message from the voters that we have been relaying now for all these years, and they have changed so many things for the good because they care about the messages that we are bringing. And this idea actually was one that the registrar called me during the 2021 election. Before they were done, she called me and said, we've just been thinking, people want paper ballots. What would you think if we, and it was just out of the blue and so miraculous because they have been listening to the concerns of the voters. What we've been saying to them is, your job is to make sure that every voter in your county feels comfortable with the process and feels that their vote can be trusted. What are you doing? Because so many people are upset about the machines and whatnot. What are you doing to turn that around? And this was one of the solutions they came up with. Well, we had to take away the paper ballot because we're now required to let people vote anywhere they want to, and they can't possibly have a stack of paper ballots for every single voter in the different districts in which we all live. And they only have, for the county, 40 ballot printers. So they couldn't deploy those. So instead, they're saying, well, you've already got the ballot that you need that's specific to you right in your hands. Instead of putting it in an envelope and sending it in and letting them manipulate the heck out of it, why not just turn it in as your paper ballot by going to the polling location one of those 11 days that it's open and just turning it in? There you go, you're done. And it's an exciting prospect, and we want to get that word out to people. We want people to go in groups. We want to say, let's all go vote together. We really want this to become a big thing.
Well, good for the Registrar of Voters. Somebody out there who still believes we're a democracy and has not gotten fired for believing that yet. Right. That's wonderful. Okay.
And yes, and the good news is that, of course, the very cooperative registrar we had, Michael Vu, was promoted to a higher position in the county, and his second in command took over as an interim registrar, Cynthia Pass, and she ran the 2021 election, and at the time was giving signals that she really wasn't interested in taking the job. But nevertheless, whoever was in charge of selecting the new person has selected her, and she's accepted. So she is in the same mold as Michael Vu, and she is the one that now is implementing this new procedure. So she's doing a lot of really wonderful things for San Diego County.
Okay, that's good news. What else is good news in the land, or potential good news in the land if
what
we
else
do
is,
the right thing?
What else is good news is that citizen groups have been fighting in California, which other states don't even believe. They think we're all a bunch of crazy people out here and we want what we've got. But we all know how many citizen groups have come together around a particular topic that is most concerning to them, whether it's parental rights or gun rights or property rights or whatever it is, and they're fighting as hard as they can on their own individual issue. But these groups now need to understand that the reason they're having an issue to fight at all is because of the electoral process that's not allowing us to elect the people we want or to throw out the people that we would like to reject. And so we're calling on each one of these groups to come together in a coalition and work together in the state, in regional coalitions and statewide coalitions, to really reinstitute election integrity in the state so that they have some power then to make the progress they want to make. So there's going to be a forum in Fresno on the weekend of February 5th, and we have just gotten word that this is also going to be something that you can join by live stream if you cannot be there in person. But we would like the leaders of as many of these coalitions as possible to show up and be there to network and be there to hear the speakers and be there to understand. It is being run not by the Election Integrity Project, although we are going to be providing a couple of speaker spots so they will hear from us. But it is actually being coordinated by a group of conservative Secretary of State candidates nationwide who have come together to try to fight back against the George Soros
takeover. So they're doing
takeover.
A lot of this in other states
they
as well.
They will be doing
I
it in
assume.
Other states as well. This is the very first one. It's being held in the central part of California in Fresno. And there is a way to register for that if you will go to our website, which is eip-ca.com. You will be able to see on that website how to register for this forum. No one is going to be allowed to be a walk-in because they want to make sure everyone coming is legitimate. So you will need to register. It is free. It doesn't cost anything, but you do have to register and allow yourself to be checked out and then show up to this forum and let's talk this over statewide and say, how can we work together to make all of these things come true?
Well, that is wonderful. Regarding the national laws, what's going on? What more are you hearing about nationally? I know you're mostly focused on California, but I know Election Integrity Project is, are you in every state or you're in more than one state, I know?
Well, we are in Arizona and Nevada actively and a little less actively in Arkansas, but we are also members of a couple of coalitions, including one very prestigious nationwide coalition that's working on this project and is going to be very exciting. So we are in the national conversation, which is good news for us because California has been ignored for so many years as just, okay, those silly Californians and nobody wants to hear from us.
We've been written off, and yet now what's going on in California, they're trying to nationalize, basically.
Yes, but because of what we've accomplished since 2012, we now have the only documentation in the nation as to why all that they're trying to do in the Washington, D.C. is damaging and unconstitutional.
So this could ironically turn into a good thing.
Precisely, precisely.
If they manage to get rid of the filibuster and get this nationalized election law through, is there anything in place from Election Integrity Project? I imagine lawsuits, but are there plans in place to deal with that? Because it would seem like curtains up, and yet I know the curtain's never really up. There's always hope. There's always something that could be done. What's the plan if they jam this through? Because right now, there's only two Democratic senators that are keeping that thing from going through.
Well, we are not big enough or wealthy enough to take on that fight. However, the advantage that we have is that we have all the documentation. All of the states that will be very upset by this, and there are many, already have lawsuits ready to go in case this were to pass. And that they're going to hit them with lawsuits left and right that should hit the Supreme Court pretty quickly. And they now are beginning to be aware that we've got the documentation that will support those lawsuits. So we will be coming in it with amicus briefs and things like that. In fact, our amicus brief that was filed in the Brnovich case, which was just recently settled by the Supreme court involving the ballot harvesting law that Arizona passed that was challenged and went all the way to the Supreme Court. It was our documentation that helped Supreme Court to uphold Arizona's right to pass that law and to enact that law. And it was a 6-3 decision that not only was ballot harvesting, that states were allowed to say, no, you can't ballot harvest in this state, but that the decision said it should be a law in every state.
Well, that should set precedent then for this nonsense they're trying to pull in Washington.
It should.
It should be a no-brainer anyway. The Constitution is very clear about election laws and that the federal government cannot interfere with the state's election laws. That actually is very clear.
And H.R. 1 and all of the other things they're doing that are similar, they interfere completely with the state's rights to determine their own election laws.
Well, it gets back to this nonsense of whatever the justices decide the Constitution means is what it means. And unfortunately, that's the way some of the justices vote. So whether it's clear in the Constitution or not, we're supposed to sit back and act like we don't know the hidden meaning of the Constitution.
But what we're saying is that the Brnovich case is a very good indication of which direction they're going to go. Exactly. And there will be no ability and time for them to pack that court any differently before that case would come before them. So it looks good from, you know, a futuristic perspective. It will cause a great deal of electoral chaos for a year or two or three until it can get settled. But these states that have begun to realize the problems that surfaced in 2020 and are taking great action, Arizona and a lot of states that are, they're changing their election laws to make it easier to vote, harder to cheat, are actually ready to pounce and say, no, you're not taking this away from us. We are not going to allow you to do this. So they're ready to challenge in a court of law if they have to, and they're the ones that have the money to do that.
Okay, well, Ruth, we only have a little over a minute left. What would you like to leave our audience with in this remaining time?
I'm sorry to do it, but I would like the audience to know that lawsuits are not cheap.
And
we are not a funded organization. We survive on the largesse of the people who believe in our work and are sending anything from $5 a month to, you know, however much they can donate. We need donations large and small. We do need the attention of some large deep pocket donors. And I would just like everyone's help by prayer and by every effort and word of mouth that they can to say, look at this lawsuit. It's posted on our website. Read it, understand its importance, and do everything you can to support it. That's the big deal right now.
Okay, so be willing to give up some of your hamburger money. Otherwise, we may have officials permanently in office that'll make hamburgers illegal. Against the law.
Exactly.
All right. Ruth, it's always a pleasure having you. Please come back again soon. Keep us updated on these lawsuits and on everything you're doing. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Thank you, Bob.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.